The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this episode of H2O. Jason Hunt here in the studio, and joining me from across town from our satellite office in the Upper East West Side of Kansas City, Mr. Timothy Harvey is here.
Hello. Now, if this is the satellite office, does that mean I get to write it off on my taxes?
We call it, only if you call it the Watchtower, right?
Yes.
Yes.
No problem.
All right. I've got a list. Sometimes we talk about the various different. Some weeks are a little bit thin, and some weeks it was like feast or famine. And this week we get so many different things that we could talk about. I mean, Grant Morrison goes to heavy metal as editor. That's going to be a trip.
Yeah, I think it seems when you consider the way he writes.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Consider heavy metal. It seems like a really good combination.
There. It is, and it is going to be total insanity over there. I think for a while. We've got Harry Knowles releasing the presentation reel for his version of John Carter that was in development at Paramount Pictures. That came out this week. We've got the rumor, and this is only a rumor, folks. We've got the rumor that Marvel Studios and 20th Century Fox have been in talks to do some kind of a co-production that would lead to Avengers versus X-Men in 2020. I don't put very much faith in that at all. Of course,
this would be the grab the salt.
Yes, yes. Copious amounts of salt with that one. Until it turns out to be true, and then we'll say, well, of course, right? And then, of course, you get the Horizons Pro, the Pluto mission. It looks like Dan Hanley's working on an article for us now that as we're recording, by the time we release this episode, it'll already be out. Basically, there has been some snags, but it seems like everything is now back on course, and we're ready for the flyby of Pluto. So that's happening.
I was kind of hoping for the when they came back online to have a little recording saying attempt no landings here.
That would have been so funny. Although, wait, what probe do we have close to Saturn? Don't we have one up there now?
Well, we're going to Europa, so of course, that's going to be the perfect time.
That would be so funny. I fully expect JPL to do something along those lines because you just have to.
Well, I would. If it's you and you have the chance.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well,
and
you know what would be even better is if they time it out to where the probe arrives at Europa on April 1st. So we get that message.
I can just see a press conference. We've received a transmission. All these worlds are yours. Save this. Attempt no landings here.
That would be so funny.
Deadpan, and they go, just kidding.
Yes. But all of those topics aside, because we got a real juicy one. It is the stuff of legends, because apparently this artist thinks of himself already as a legend. To read the Twitterverse blowing up during Montreal Comic Con. I'm mixing my metaphors here. Arthur Sydam. I'm going to assume that's how we pronounce that name because I don't know. So here's what happened. So Jim Zub, who is, I believe, working with Marvel at the moment, posts on Twitter on Friday. Quote, he just shows up early, sets up his gargantuan booth, and takes down the signage for the people next to him. No regard for anyone else. The shows don't stop him, so he just continues his ego-fueled awfulness year after year. I am very, very easygoing. I don't anger or insult easily. This guy makes my blood boil. Now, the reactions to those tweets were people sitting there going, oh, we know who this is. You're talking about, we know who, this guy. Yeah, we know this guy. Ray Fox, who I think is also with Marvel at the moment, says, I'm not in Montreal, so I don't know for sure, but last year I saw Arthur Sydam do it twice. And from there, Twitter just had an Arthur aneurysm over the weekend. I mean, it was, to see so many comic book artists go after this guy for this behavior, and the allegations are that Arthur Sydam, who is very, very proud of himself, I'll read from his bio here in a minute, he's apparently of the opinion that he could pay for a single table booth at Comic Cons and take four. Which
right.
is kind of rude. That would be a one word, maybe, that we could say.
A little bit. And in the context, and we've talked about this before, with the change in con culture, that, you know, we have a lot of artists who are less than thrilled that it seems to have moved away from the artists being a focal point of the various floors, and so you've got a lot of the cosplay, you know, people pulling away. And so there's already a sense among some of the artists out there that, you know, they're already dealing with people pulling away from, you know, having the exposure that they used to have. And then to have someone come along and basically go, yeah, I'm going to take over the space that you paid for.
Yeah.
Seems a little, I don't know, problematic.
Well, and this story in Bleeding Cool.
Rude?
Yeah, really. Well, Bleeding Cool's got an article. It was posted July 5th. And it was, and this is on the back end of all of this. So I probably, let me skip back, because this is skipping ahead, because this thing just would not die and still is going around. So Ron Mars drops his Twitter stuff. This is all still going on Friday the 3rd. Sorry that fans and creators have to deal with people like Arthur Sydam, but we have a responsibility to call out such awful behavior. If you see a bad name, King Arthur Sydam, or any other pro attempt this, do not let them get away with it. Get help. Demand the con. Fix it. He says, also hope people are not blaming Montreal Comic-Con because an unscrupulous creator did something lousy. The deed puts a con in a very bad spot. Image. Now, Image Comics, Eric Larson from Image Comics, he actually looked at something completely different surrounding all of this. He posted a photo of Sydam signing. Now, I guess we should tell people who this guy is before we get too far into this.
Yeah.
All right, so you handle that part. I'll drink my Coke.
Thank you. If you've heard of Marvel Zombies, and you've seen the cover art for Marvel Zombies, that really impressive, it's almost become iconic with the popularity of something like Marvel Zombies. That's him. That's the guy. And it's actually it's a very distinct style. And from an artistic level, I'm gonna say it's a pretty slick, you know. He's a good artist. And he definitely made a nice visual impact with that, and clearly clearly he has lots of fans for that. However,
you know,
not so much from his fellow creators, apparently.
You don't do the man justice, Mr. Harvey. Let me read his own words.
Oh, okay.
this is from ArthurSidom.com. Quote, award-winning creator and Marvel artist Arthur Sidom's meteoric rise to superstardom for his work for the smash hit series Marvel Zombies broke graphic novel records, immediately placing the artist in the category of comic legend. Arthur Sidom was recently honored with the Spike TV Scream Award, Best Writer, Best Artist, Best Comic of the Year. Sidom's short story, Christmas Carol, was chosen for inclusion in the Mammoth Book of Horror and Legends for Best Comic Horror Stories of All Time, and The Art of Painted Comics, 2008. Sidom was recently honored with the prestigious Spectrum Gold Award for Excellence in Illustration, the San Sebastian Film Festival Lifetime Achievement Award, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and numerous fan site favorite awards across the globe. Sidom's popular covers have graced the covers of Deadpool, Marvel Zombies, Dead Days, Marvel Zombies No. 2, Marvel Zombies No. 3, Batman, Wolverine, Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, X-Men, Ghost Rider, Thor, Spider-Girl, Black Panther, Oz Chronicles, and more. In 2008, Marvel released an exclusive hardcover tribute to the works of this unique artist entitled Marvel Zombies, the covers dedicated to Sidom's groundbreaking work. Additional recent works include Dynamite's Army of Darkness, Savage Tales, Red Sonja, and the smash hit Army of Darkness vs. Marvel Zombies, and Raise the Dead. Past works include work on Batman vs. Predator, Conan the Barbarian, Tarzan, and House of Secrets. Let's see. I'm going to skip a couple of paragraphs because it's just detail stuff. A lifelong fan of Marvel Comics, Sidom also branches out with select projects that include film noir for Hard Case Crime, where Sidom provides retro-inspired covers. Sidom's immense body of written and illustrative work comprises an aesthetic that is as uniquely distinguishable as it is organic and poetic. I'm not going to go any further, but
if this
was not written with tongue planted firmly in cheek, this guy, who is all of what, 30? How old is he?
Oh, good Lord, no idea.
He hasn't been around that long.
Well, I mean, he's a very, very popular artist, and I mean, okay, you know, bear in mind that your personal website is your marketing tool, so you're going to say the accolades that, okay, you push that stuff, you promote it. That doesn't bother me. He's done more stuff than I'm aware of, which is fine, which is great. And like I said, he's a very popular artist, and he's got a very distinctive style, and it's worked out very, very well for him.
And
power to him.
And let's be clear, we're not talking, we're not addressing whether or not the guy's got talent. I mean, he's clearly a talented artist, or Marvel wouldn't keep hiring him. He wouldn't be very popular. He would keep getting work. He's got the chops.
Yeah.
But.
However. talent does not absolve you of playing nice with others.
Right.
In a environment that you kind of have to play nice with others. Now, don't misunderstand. It is there is a long, long history of very, very talented people being awful, and you do really have to sometimes separate the art from the artist, because the art can be amazing, and that's music or film or visual arts of any kind or whatever it is, separate the product from the person, because we're dealing with this on multiple levels right now, because you've got things like the whole Bill Cosby thing going on and all these things where you can sit there and go, clearly there's bad things happening here. Does that mean I can't like his comedy albums from 20 years ago? Because he's awful, So it's you have to separate the two, okay? But in the context of a Comic-Con, where you are in an environment with your co-creators, your other artists, your other writers, and you've got booth space, which people pay for,
which is very limited as a resource to begin with.
Oh yeah. And then for that to be hijacked by somebody, no matter how talented they are. I've never been of the opinion that, getting stomped on by someone big is a good thing.
It'd be different if it was Neil Adams doing it, but I think Neil Adams pays for all of the space that he gets, because he gets a pretty big space at Planet Comic Con, and I think he gets 3 or 4 tables worth at, because the last time he was here, he had a good sized space, but it was clearly marked on the map as his space. I'm sure that he got what he paid for, and conversely, he paid for what he got. Rather than taking anything out. Now, this article here at Bleeding Cool also continues, and I'm not gonna get into Eric Larson's thing yet, because it's different from this other part. Mark Wade came in on this, and he said he posted on Twitter. Now, all of this is going on Twitter, by the way, folks. If you were not on Twitter, you missed a lot of this, unless you were reading about it later. Mark Wade, my biggest regret this weekend is not being at Montreal to personally and forcibly move Arthur Sydam's stuff, that's not what he said, off other artists' tables. And then he goes on, Eric Burnham responded, at least you know, Mark, you'll probably have the opportunity at a show in the future. Mark Wade says, I long for it. All I can see when I close my eyes is me literally turning over tables. And then he says, just checked. Sydam's at an island to himself at Tampa, my next post-San Diego show. He can't pull there, and he will be watched. Trust me, busy contacting every show I'm doing the rest of the year to warn them that if Sydam pulls this there, I'll make it loud and ugly. Mark Wade has put Arthur Sydam on notice. And then Bleeding Cool reached out to the artists that were supposed to have tables where they ended up not having tables. Let's see here. Francis Manapul, Rachel Ritchie, and Dan Parent apparently were the artists that got displaced at Montreal. And Bleeding Cool got a statement from Rachel Ritchie. She says, I learned about what happened from another creator who had been sitting across from where we were supposed to be, who watched the signage change overnight as Arthur replaced it for his own. It wasn't until I realized the implications of this change that I became a bit frustrated. As a smaller creator press, I rely on being found in the program, as accessibility drives most of my sales, and it's a pretty selfish move to think you're above the convention that invited you and that you're more deserving than your colleagues. Having said that, it was not my intention to have him ostracized. After all, if this is Arthur's habitual behavior, it's our collective responsibility to make others aware of it. And she goes on to talk about the support from fans and the event itself, whatever. Francis Manapul. To be honest, I wasn't aware of the situation until more than halfway through the first day. I was shown to my table by one of the organizers, who I know to be a really great guy. I asked how his day was, and he led on about a disastrous situation. He seemed stressed out, so I didn't press him, and just pointed out that there's nowhere to go but upward. When I got to my spot, I saw my nameplate on the table rather than hanging behind like all the other creators' nameplates. I didn't think much of it since there wasn't a line. I took the opportunity to say hello to fellow creators. During that time, Rachel put up my banner and a line had formed, so I sat down and proceeded to sign books. Throughout the day, I got a lot of confused, relieved people who approached my table and told me tales of their long journey. I just replied, my location should be in the book. Unbeknownst to me was that I was actually in the wrong spot because I had been displaced by Arthur. And he goes on to talk about his reaction, that this was just really bizarre, and trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And then you get a response from Renee Witterstater, who is Sidem's representative. And I'm going to read the whole thing. In response to the post about Montreal Comic Con this weekend and the table placement for artists at the show, let me state that I am the booking agent for a group of artists that include Michael Golden, with whom we have a connection, slightly, Arthur Sidem, Mike Zack, and others at the convention. When we arrived for setup on Thursday, there was a snafu with the table setups for all the artists. In order to correct the problem, everyone was moved. The Montreal Comic Con, much to their credit, stepped in and found solutions for all the table placements so that all artists had their agreed-upon table amounts. No changes were made without the show's knowledge, and no artist made any arbitrary changes of their own. So this is basically a denial.
Right.
But Sidem himself sent out an email, and his response is very different from his representative's response. The Montreal show changed its floor plan on Thursday, the day before the show. However, they didn't send out notification, and only the five American artists at setup time on Thursday night knew of the table placement floor plan change. The next day at showtime, the Canadian artists unfortunately began hearing from a singular troublemaking fan artist who wasn't there at setup, who began spreading fabrications to the artists and online that the American artists at the row end were taking their tables, and guess who that lucky artist on the end was? The fan artist wasn't in the loop on Thursday and so knew nothing. This is the guy who sat across from us all weekend long at his table with no fans and no one paying him any attention while the crowds flocked to the American artist's table. Then the low IQ online crowds, too lazy to check facts, more interested to turn simple misunderstandings into an opportunity to create some trouble, jumped in. The fan artist he's talking about would be Jim Zub. Is Jim Canadian? Are we?
You know what? That's a good question.
Is Arthur starting a border war here?
That's a fairly foolish one.
Wait, what difference does it make if there's between Americans and Canadians? I mean, come on, what is that all about?
Well, I mean, it's look, here's the when responding to situations like this, on the list of things not to do, would involve using the words low IQ anywhere in the conversation. And I coordinate with your PR people so that you're not giving conflicting information, but try not to be, what's the word I'm looking for that I can say on what we try to keep a relatively family-friendly podcast?
Yeah, really, no kidding.
It's a four-letter word.
Yeah.
It starts with B, it ends with K, and
remember, folks, Wheaton's Law, right? Well, and that doesn't even go toward the other controversy that blew up this weekend. This idea addressing the crowds in the photos for Arthur Sidem's publicity photos. Now, Eric Larson at Image Comics, I think he was the first one to start this on Friday, pointing out that there's differences in the lighting in the crowd shown on the photo. And then Matthew Warlick He posts on Twitter, the secret to those large Comic-Con crowds is Photoshop. Now, he's got the photo that Sidem posted, and then he's got other photos of crowds, and I don't know where these came from, but they're the people in Sidem's crowd are in these shots. They've clearly right. been Photoshopped into the publicity photo. And, of course, Sidem blames it on an assistant.
Of instead course. Well, you know those assistants. Everybody has a bad assistant.
That's
there's
right.
There's always one. In fact, you need to check your assistants, Jason, because there's one of them is plotting against you.
Well,
and
preparing
to undermine you by bad Photoshops, poor press releases, inappropriate tweets. You know, this is called throw the intern on the sword.
The
intern has gone home for the day, so the intern's not around to have a sword to be thrown on. But it's, you know, it's kind of this, you hear this stuff a lot in movie stars and politicians, you know, who get caught saying the wrong thing the big rally that, you know, it's like 120,000 people were there.
Yeah.
You know, you had 2,000 people there, and we've got the photos to prove it. You know, it's just you hype this stuff, but the thing is that it's the age of the internet.
Yeah, nothing goes away.
It's the age of reverse image search. It's the age of instant fact checking.
Not enough people do. Yeah, well, and apparently his response, he issued a statement to Bleeding Cool about it. You know, thanks for bringing the photo to our attention. I'm on the road to the internet. If it's the one I think by the description, that's a rather old one that one of my former assistants pulled off the internet. Probably a pic that the client was using to promote an appearance. I had liked the photo because it was a side view and showcased the fans as well in the convention experience. It seemed representative. We had no idea anything in the photo was apart from the original, since I do have a lot of folks visiting, especially on Sunday. Excuse me, wait a minute. No, this is not a Sunday crowd in this photo. I'm sorry, that is not a Sunday crowd. That's a Saturday after lunch crowd, if anything. That's not a Sunday crowd. I'm sorry. This guy is, I'm... Fine, he's going to get more work. I understand that. But, you know, he's not doing himself any favors.
No, this is very tone deaf. And oddly enough, we're at this weird point right now where we're at the beginnings of the political silly season where everyone is paying attention to what everybody says.
Yeah.
At all times. And we just had, and we are not going to go on politics here, but Donald Trump is in all kinds of trouble because the man opens his mouth and have for the past all of his life, he says things that can be construed as dumb. And he gets himself in all this trouble by things he's recently said. It's everywhere, okay? To think that you can say anything right now when everyone's paying attention, we have this big thing going on over here. It doesn't, you know, no matter what the subject is, whether it's comic books or politics or you know, baseball or whatever it is, somebody said something that is tone deaf right now, everyone's going to go, what? Are we sure we want to use those words? You know, we're going to attack the Canadians. I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, I was like, what is that all about?
Here's how you solve this problem, is you say, we thought that we had those tables, we're sorry, you know, we support our fellow artists, this will never happen again. That's how you solve the problem.
Right. Except, this is something we could talk about when we get back from the break, apparently this is not the first time he's done it. We can talk about that a little bit.
That would be the issue.
Yeah. So after our break, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna refill mugs and drinks and stuff, and we're gonna let you hear from our sponsor, superherostuff.com. They are purveyors of fine licensed merchandise that you can cool that things. You can order. We have our next shipment is on its way.
Yes.
So it should be arriving at headquarters at any moment. So in the meantime, yes, we will let you hear from them, and we will be back with more H2O right after this. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Klaatu, Barara, Nikto, you are now under the influence of Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
And we are back from our break, freshly, well, in my case, very large cup of water. It's too late for coffee when I'm recording this, which is a rare thing for you to hear me say, anyone listening to this.
No coffee? Heresy, you say,
sir. I know. I have an early morning, so, you know. Yep. But, we are back. I am Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting across the town from... Jason Hunt.
Yeah.
I am not in the bunker. I am in our satellite office.
Yeah.
The watchtower, which he decided to call it, which I'm perfectly fine with.
And the official show monitor has pointed out something. We were talking about how old Arthur Sydam is, because I didn't know. Because
he's 62.
Figured out 62
he's
years
62
old.
62 years old.
And it's pointed out here, you'd think at that age that you would know the difference between right and wrong. And you were saying...
There's something that happens when you are very talented and people recognize that you are talented. There becomes a sense of entitlement. And when you become famous, you think you deserve to be treated in a certain way, or that you have the right to certain things, whether or not you actually do. And that doesn't—it's not every, you know. Obviously, this doesn't happen to everybody who's famous or rich or powerful. There are many, you know. But it's a thing that you can definitely see. I mean, he would hardly be the first person in the history of humanity to sit there and think, I should have this because I'm famous. And he won't be the last. And the issue, you know, I think there's a tendency when you and I read this sort of stuff and hear this sort of stuff, sit there and go, because of what we do, to sit there and say, okay, well, wait a minute, what's this guy's side of the story? And... because, you know, there is always two sides of the story. But then we got his side of the story, which is kind of, you know, oh, that's awfully arrogant. And why do you want to go to war with Canada? I mean, seriously.
Oh, yeah,
what do
I
they
know.
Have that we need?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, we get their hockey. They give us their actors. What else do we need from Canada? We're hearing that it's not the first time he's done this. This is not an isolated incident. This is something that apparently is happening over and over and over again.
Now, to be fair, let's put the shoe on the other foot here for a second, because you know, being some sort of kind of journalist that we are, we want to be objective and fair. It is entirely possible that Arthur Sydam has in his contract for an appearance at a Comic-Con that he gets X and so amount of space. And as part of that, whether he gets, you know, one table, 10 tables, however much, basically based on square footage, that you get a certain amount. And if the convention people who are setting up all of the booth space, if there's not a communication here that, oh, this guy gets four tables, oh, this guy gets two tables, this person gets a corner table, this person gets an end cap, whatever, I mean, that's a huge thing. And we know personally from talking to Chris Jackson over at Planet Comic Con and Kirk Critton and all the guys that are responsible for that show, what a nightmare it is to organize one of these things. If you don't have solid communication among your people, then you are definitely going to have snafus. You're definitely going to have things happen that aren't supposed to happen. So let's assume just for a moment that Arthur Sydam has in his contract that he gets X and so square footage of space. Now, Montreal Comic-Con, they did a generic little, we had something happen, we took care of it, you know, everything, it would take some responsibility for, but it was a very generic, nobody took any responsibility for anything, blame, nothing. So we really don't know about Montreal specifically what happened there. The allegations are that Sydam goes in and does this frequently at other conventions. And of course, any person who's going into creator into Artist Alley or Creators Row or any of those groups, they're not necessarily going to know what's in his contract for the amount of space that he gets. So let's stipulate that. Because it doesn't really prove that he's done anything wrong if he moved other people. Now, legally, contractually, whatever, if he's moved other people out of his space, that's one thing, but the way to handle it would be to find somebody in an orange shirt that says staff and say, hey, I'm supposed to have four tables here. I've only got one. Can you take care of it, please? Not do it yourself.
Right.
You know, there's a certain way of handling this kind of thing to satisfy propriety, let's say. And you know, but on the converse side of that, as loud as the creative community has been over this, you know, it's easy to sit there and think that this guy does what he does. He's full of himself. He thinks he deserves it and whatever. Now, we don't know. We'll make sure that everybody understands. We don't know what happened. We don't know. And according to Chris, Chris Jackson even dived in on this a little bit over Twitter, saying that Arthur is not scheduled to appear next year at Planet Comic-Con. I don't know if he's supposed to be at Kansas City Comic-Con or not. I don't think he is. So we probably are not going to have to deal with this here locally, but just given how the creative community responded over this one incident when Jim Zub posted this on Twitter, I mean, it's blown up. And we're going on close to a week now where this kind of stuff has been discussed.
You run into something really interesting here in that if this was an isolated incident, if this was a one-off, if this was, you know, a mistake, a tactless, taking the space that you were supposed to have, and you know, not communicating it well to other people, and causing problems because you took the space that you were rightfully entitled to, but you did it without telling people what you were doing, and then causing that's one thing. But this is, but what we're seeing here is that this is not the only time this has happened. This is like a recurring thing. This is something that he does. And that, I think, becomes not only an issue of coming across as someone who feels like they're entitled, but also just really inconsiderate behavior to the creators around you. I mean, this is... it doesn't matter how talented you are. It doesn't matter how famous you are. When you're there in that space, the people around you are creators as well.
Yeah.
And if it's a brand, if it's a fan artist or someone who's got they're publishing their first comic book, or their first book cover or whatever it is, just because you've got the track record and the sales and the books and the posters and the whatever it is that you've built your career on doesn't mean you get to treat them any less. We all start somewhere. We all have that point where we're the nobody. There was a time when he was the nobody too.
Right. Well, and you look at somebody like
Rachel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you look at somebody like Rachel Ritchie who relies on convention traffic for sales, like she said in her statement, and just this idea, and even if we say, okay, he gets in his contract, he gets a certain amount of square footage, I find it very hard to believe that this would keep happening over and over and over and over again, the way people are describing his behavior, as he comes in, he sets up his stuff, he moves other people's marked space. Now that to me right there is a tip off, because if this is one time, one and done, oopsie, we made a mistake, you're supposed to get four tables and we only gave you one, we're sorry, let's move it and I'll get it taken care of. But that's not what it sounds like. And if it's a repeated thing where you've got artists sitting there saying he does this all the time, where he comes in, goes to his tables, moves other people's stuff away and sets up his own things, that's not a contract thing. That's not the event organizers making a mistake over and over and over again. If I was the one who said, okay, if I'm the artist, and if I have a contract that says I get 50 square feet, and I come in to the just say Montreal, and I don't have 50 square feet, one, I'm going to go to the organizer, I'm going to say, hey, my contract says I got to have 50 square feet. Can you accommodate me here? What are we going to do? You take care of it that way behind the scenes. Then I go to San Diego. My contract says I'm supposed to have 50 square feet. Well, I only got 20 square feet. Well, I go to the convention organizers and say, hey, my contract says I'm supposed to have 50 square feet here. What can we do? And then if I go to Salt Lake and my contract says 50 square feet and I don't get... See, if it starts to repeat itself, if the conventions keep making that mistake, then I'm going to tell my booking agent, make sure they understand I'm supposed to get 50 square feet. Because if this thing keeps happening over and over and over again, then obviously somebody on Arthur Sydam's side is not making sure that the conventions understand how much space he's supposed to get.
Which seems highly unlikely.
Extremely unlikely.
At best, it's highly unlikely. Yeah, it's just... I guess what I'm really surprised about in all of this is, again, the idea that you could think you could do this and get away with it. And I think that's kind of the thing that makes me look at this whole thing with this kind of like, I don't understand what's happening here, because people talk to each other. This is not like, you know.
Yeah, well, not only are they talking to each other, but they're talking on the internet. And
oh yeah, which is the biggest megaphone that exists right now. I mean, yeah. You're not gonna, you know, and
I mean, Jim Zub alone has over 11,500 followers on Twitter.
Well, and you know, Mark Wade is not an inconsequential individual to have angry at you.
Oh no, you don't want Mark Wade looking at you sideways. Definitely not.
And I guess that's what's really, really surprising to me, is that the idea that you could have this kind of reaction from people and not realize that you're in the wrong, and even if it is somehow an honest mistake, where everyone's like, oh wow, oh geez, you know, somehow I've stepped in it here and I feel terrible, and you know, that whole crazy thing of just saying, hey, oops, I'm sorry, yeah. You know, hey, let's you know, I appreciate that what these other folks are doing, you know, that these other creators are there, and you know, I this is not what I wanted, and you know, all the things you could be saying that could make all of this go away.
Yes.
And then you don't say that. You use words like low IQ.
Oh, I know. Canada. You know, it's funny.
Yeah,
I'm reading some of the, I mean, just to see how many people piled on this. I mean, Eric Larson, you know, Mark Wade, Eric Larson, Jim Zub, Patrick, I don't know who they are, Robert Hack, Jim Demonakos, Ryan Stegman, Joe Eisma, Brian Lynch, DJ Kaufman, Andrew Wheeler, responding to Francis Manipal. Now, Manipal said, despite the interesting day, Montreal has been nothing but awesome to me, so on to a new day. Andrew Wheeler, I don't know if he's another artist, I think he is. He says, swipe to, Francis goes back to his hotel room, finds Arthur Sydam there. Brian Lynch, weird, Arthur Sydam just took over 3 of my tweets without even asking. I mean, they just start going off. Joe Eisma, let's all start stealing Arthur Sydam's tables at cons from now on. I mean, Joe Eisma, also another one. I was photoshopped into Arthur Sydam's pic, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt. And, you know, and it's just, it just keeps going. It just keeps going. And they've even started, they've even got a thing now calling it Tablegate.
Of course.
And there's a hashtag now.
If everything's a gate.
There's a hashtag now, sidomized.
Oh, wow. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I mean,
that's inappropriate, but I like that.
Highly inappropriate, but it does reflect the mood that is out there right now. The tone deaf nature of the response just speaks volumes.
This is such a simple fix.
Yeah.
It's called I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Yeah.
And you know what? We are used to the insincere apology. We get the insincere apology several times a year from somebody in who's either in authority or famous or whatever, who gets caught doing the bad thing, and they say I'm sorry. And, you know, it's, I'm a terrible human being, it won't happen again. And we're used to that. And nobody believes them, but it's the thing you do.
It's the dance.
You know? Yeah. It's the dance. You sit there, you know, you apologize for being awful. Everyone sits there and goes, yes, yes, you're a terrible person. And they go on, and then they move on. And that's unfortunate, but it's the nature of, I think it's part of the nature of celebrity.
Well, see, I don't even recall ever seeing, you know, cause we mentioned Grant Morrison at the top of the show, you know, getting now he's going to be the editor of Heavy Metal. Morrison has a reputation for being a little enamored with himself, but I've never seen any online discussion to this degree and scale with regard to Morrison's attitude. Because Morrison, you know, granted, Morrison's he's a big deal, and you know he's got his own convention named after himself and all that, whatever. But I don't know that there's ever been such an online backlash to this extent over anything that Morrison's done that I can recall.
Well, but I think I don't think so either. And I think in this case, it really feels like the creators, the people who are honestly, whether they're, you know, like I said, we all start somewhere. And what it seems to feel like for a lot of these folks is that this is someone who is acting as if he gets to have more because of who he is. But it's inside the community. You know, you're picking on other artists. You're picking on other creators, which, you know, we're all kind of tribal, and that's just the way people are. But you certainly would expect there to be a certain amount of everyone looking at each other and saying, you know, hey, you know, we stand with our own on this. You know, it is a community. And if you are messing with the community, if you're messing with the newest people in the community, if you're messing with the fan artists and that person who's got their first, you know, comic book or novel or whatever it is, who's out there, probably, you know, they may have spent all of their money to get that table.
Yeah.
You know, because those things aren't cheap.
And the bigger the convention gets, the less cheap it is.
Oh yeah. So if you're there and maybe there's travel expenses and all the different things that can cause those costs, that's important to you. And to have somebody sit there and come in and just take that away, a lot of those folks who are you know, blasting him on Twitter, I kind of suspect they remember what it was like to be hungry and to be starting out and to be at that table for the first time going, oh God, oh God, oh God, somebody please buy my book.
Yeah. Just come by and say hi. Just come visit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that matters. And like we've talked about before, there's a change in con culture where the creators are not necessarily the folks people have come there to see. It's the, you know, the studio shows up with their trailer for, you know, Star Wars or X-Men 12 or Avengers 32, and you know the wonderful, amazing cosplayers we have. We have a lot of artists who are already feeling like they're losing some of the traffic.
Yeah.
So for this to be even on top of that is, you know, I guess I'm really not surprised that we have a lot of folks who are unhappy with him. I am surprised with I'm not hearing anybody defend him. Aside from his agent, are you hearing anybody defend him?
I have not. I've seen in some of the comment threads people that are allowing for the possibility that this is not more than it is. Just because, yeah, hey, we're not there, we don't know, it could be in his contract, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just like we've talked about here, you know, we're allowing for the possibility that this is supposed to be the way it is, and somebody's just dropping the ball. But given how many professional artists who probably know a little bit about what they're talking about are saying this kind of stuff, and how consistent it is from one to the other to the other, I would hazard a guess that where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, the other interesting thing here is that when you've got the kind of history he's got the kind of audience that he has, he's very, very popular. None of these people, and some of these are fairly decent-sized names, but a lot, not all of them are huge power players in the industry. They're not really seeming to be very afraid of calling him on this. There's not a whole lot of, you know, we don't want to step on his toes because, you know, he's, you know, Marvel loves him.
Right.
It's a whole lot of, no, you're being a jerk, and we're not going to take it anymore. Which, you know, I mean, there's politics to be played in everything, sad to say. And, you know, you don't necessarily go and kick in the door of the person who can, you know, wreck your career later. These people aren't worried about that.
Well,
these are people who are not concerned about whether or not he's going to be unhappy with them about this.
Okay, coming to get you.
That to me says something else. I know they always are, and they never find me.
Well, see, and the other thing too is, and I think that also reflects how the industry itself overall has changed, because you're not so dependent on Marvel or DC to get the work. Because lot of these guys, you know, Joe Eisenman is one of them. You've got a lot of guys who, and gals, and, you know, men and women, both artists in this field, who have made their bones on the internet. They already have a built-in audience from their online publications, their creator-owned stuff, which is what gets them noticed from the big publishers. I mean, I remember talking to Nick Lowe at Planet Comic Con, I think, three or four years. Well, it was back when it was still at Overland Park Convention Center before we moved downtown. Nick Lowe was the group editor for the X-Men titles at the time. And I was asking, you know, every convention, you know, conventions all the time, you get editors coming in, they do artist portfolios, and they'll look at work, but how do writers get to break in? And he said, even back then, this is 4 or 5 years ago, he said the best way for writers to break into the business is to publish their own stuff online and get it noticed and build an audience. And that's what a lot of these guys are doing. And you're right, they don't have to feel beholden to any of the people that have come before. They're not standing on the shoulders of others. They're doing it themselves, and there may be influence from people like Mark Waid or Alex Ross or from the art side, who Bernie Wrightson or Jack Kirby or any of those guys, but they're not counting on that. They're not looking at it saying, well, my art is just like Kirby's, you should like my stuff. You know, it's not as, I don't want to say it's not as important, but it doesn't factor in as much when you look at the audience response to a particular artist.
No, but it's one of the pros and cons of the internet age is that you can get exposure in a way you weren't able to get it before. And there's different avenues for artists, because it's hard to break into the business. It's hard to break in. It's hard to get noticed as a comic book artist or a comic book writer or a novelist or anything. And it always has been.
Yeah.
And the era, you know, as we've talked about before, it's not a huge, really, you know, despite the popularity of the films and all that, the actual comic book, the actual audience for comic books is not that big.
No, I think it's only maybe about 300,000 or 400,000, if that.
So it is a tough crowd to break into.
Yeah.
Now all the publishing houses are always looking for new talent, of course. I mean, that's just a given. But you know, still, so every chance you have for exposure when you are starting out, you know, that table at Comic-Con, that place where you have a chance to show off what you can do, that's gold. That's all. That's, you know, that's some of the most precious stuff in the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even for somebody like us, I mean, we don't, you know, we're not artists or writers or anything like that. But I remember the first time we had a space at an event, and you know, going through my head the entire weekend, is this going to do us any good? Are we going to get an audience? Are people going to come by and visit? Do we have anything interesting? Are we going to be delivering something of value? And you know, that's us just sitting there and, hey, here we are, we've got a website. The artists who actually have something that people can look at, they've even got more writing on the line, because I can come by and I can look at this art and I can think it's good or I can think it's not good. And the people that think it's not good are going to go to, don't even bother with him over there, that's not any good stuff, let's go over here and look. So it's even more important. It's even more of a stress source, I would expect, for artists, because they literally are. They're laying it out there for everybody to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then for something like this to happen, where, you know, even in the case of a misunderstanding, that can be, you know, just, that can ruin your week. It can be financially devastating for some of these folks. You could be throwing in, you know, we know people who come out and do this stuff, and we know how hard it is to you know, take that chance that you're gonna have somebody notice what you do, and then to look at this as something that is not a one-time deal. It's not apparently a one-off.
Yeah. Well, and it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Mark Waid follows up on it, because if he's he's going to be the one to watch at this point. He has laid down the gauntlet, and I'm sure that people are going to start following him on Twitter just to see what happens. You know, get the popcorn, because it's about to start. And it's about to end for us. So that's gonna wrap up there for this episode. Now I do wanna make sure that we're very clear that this entire hour that we have been opining over this situation is based on our understanding of what may have happened. These are alleged events. There is nothing that has come out says this actually happened thus and so way. So
no video evidence at this time.
Right. There is nothing to substantiate any of this outside of the fact that so many people are saying the same thing about the same person. So with that in mind, I just want to make sure that we stipulate all of this is based on what we think we know, and addressing the behavior, whether it actually is a consistent behavior or not. I mean, the behavior itself, this is rude. And this is the kind of thing that deserves to be called out. And so, as part of our obligation as fans, and we have a little tiny megaphone here with this show, be nice to people. Show some consideration.
Oh, yeah.
Be polite. Wheaton's law is in effect. So let's end on that, and we will be back next week with another episode of H2O. In the meantime, if you have a comment or if you have any corroboration on this situation, or if you have an idea for a topic we can discuss in future episodes, you can send us a note, h20@scififorme.com. We do encourage you to visit superherostuff.com, our sponsor here. And along those lines, if you would like to support our efforts here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, we do have a place now where you can contribute. We've set up a campaign over on Patreon. It's patreon.com/sci-fi for me. We'll put a link in our show notes. And you can support our efforts here. Everything's explained over there. And it's kind of like subscription crowdfunding. So we're excited to see where that takes us. And in the meantime, if you want to connect with us over on social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and I think I got them all.
I think you did.
I think I did. All right, that's going to do it for us. Timothy Harvey. And my name is Jason Hunt. On behalf of everyone here at Sci-Fi for Me, thanks very much for listening, and we will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.